is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We're going to spend this hour talking about the controversial so-called Boston Free Speech Rally, which is being held tomorrow, and we want to hear your thoughts about the event. Thousands of people are expected on Boston Common for this rally, which is now getting national attention because some of the participants are linked to the same people who were involved in last weekend's violent rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. This hour, we want to hear from people participating, people protesting, and people preparing for this event. Listeners, also, we want to hear from you. Are you going to the rally tomorrow? Are you going to protest, or are you staying away from Boston because of what's going on? Also, what do you make of the president's comments about what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia this week? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. First, we want to start with today's developments. Officials gave an update this morning about public safety related to tomorrow's rally. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh issued a stern warning to anyone who might be thinking about using violence to get their point across. That's, of course, what happened in Charlottesville last weekend, but this is what Mayor Walsh had to say about it this morning.
If you're looking to start trouble, regardless who you are tomorrow, don't come to Boston. We don't want you here. This free speech, so-called free speech rally, I mean, this said some hurt. Some of the people speaking have said some very hurtful things about the Jewish community, about the African-American community, about a whole bunch of other communities. I don't want them here. Let me be clear. I do not want them here.
WBUR reporter Bruce Gellerman was at today's press conference with the mayor, and he joins us. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Deb.
So what kind of safety measures is the city taking?
Well, they're going to take some very unusual ones. For the first time in the city's history, they're going to be shutting down the Frog Pond. They're going to be shutting down the Swan Boats. They want to have complete control over the Boston Garden and the Common during the rally. Mm-hmm. They're also going to have like 500 policemen there from the city. They're going to have 100 state policemen, more if they're needed, the governor said. They're going to have a lot of undercover policemen in the crowd. And they're going to have a lot of surveillance cameras, a lot of extra surveillance cameras. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of restrictions on those going to the Common, there are several restrictions in place as well?
Oh, yeah. Very severe. Backpacks will be inspected. You're cautioned not to bring a backpack. No sticks, no weapons, no bottles. They are taking a very hard line. There is zero tolerance. Those are the words of the mayor. He said, zero tolerance. We're going to shut it down if anything happens.
Hmm. So, but are these really any different from other safety measures for big events? You know, certainly we saw increased security after the marathon bombing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had all of the sports rallies. Mm-hmm. We have the July 4th on the Esplanade. We've had big events here. People
yeah.
have been concerned. I mean, and there have been no backpacks, certainly no weapons, right? So is it different?
Well, they think it might be different, so they're taking extra precautions. You know, we had 175,000 people who showed up on the Common for the Women's March in January, and actually, Police Commissioner Bill Evans specifically mentioned that.
We've had a lot of success with the soft approach. We're not about coming to battle the crowd. We're put in a difficult position. We shouldn't be the target of people's frustration tomorrow. The target of people's frustration should be that white supremacy, the hatred, the stuff that I think we all agree is disgusting.
So Bruce, I wonder, do you think it would take something incredibly minor to shut down this event?
I think they're going to be right on top of whatever happens. They've got tactical units all over the Common, and they're separating the people with barriers so they can't even come in contact with each other. They're not fooling around. I've never seen this, Deb.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of groups are we expecting to show up?
Well, they're expecting about 1,000 people, as many as 1,000 show up for the free speech rally. That would be a lot more than showed up at the first free speech rally in May, where mm-hmm. there was just a handful of people on either side. On the counter-demonstrator side, there's at least two groups organizing, and they could say they're saying something like 20,000 or more people showing up.
Hmm. So did the mayor or the commissioner say anything else today about public safety or anything else we should know about?
Well, they did mention they're closing down streets. The mayor said his thoughts and prayers and condolences were with the people of Barcelona. They said they did not have specific threats from, you know, a terrorist or anything like that, but they're taking extra measures. They wouldn't say what. So they are doing quite a bit.
And Bruce, is there historical significance to a rally like this in Boston?
Oh, yeah. On Boston Common is the Shaw Memorial honoring Massachusetts 54th Regiment and the first black soldiers who fought in the Civil War. And you might remember, not far away, is the City Hall Plaza where, during busing in 1976, a white teen was attacking a black man with an American flag on a pole. And Mayor Walsh mentioned the historical significance because it's the Parkman Bandstand where the rally is going to be taking place.
Three gentlemen spoke from that bandstand they're going to be at tomorrow. Frederick Douglass, President Obama, and Martin Luther King Jr. Those messages were not of hate. In a very different time. We don't need, a handful of people who think they're, speaking on behalf of America, which they're not.
Very strong words, Bruce. Strong words on both sides. And there are many folks who are saying all of this attention could actually be putting fuel in the fire here. Is that a concern?
We spoke to the organizer of this, and he said, we've got to talk to each other. This should create a dialogue. We should be able to listen to each other so that there is a middle ground, so it's not these extremes. I think he's being sincere about that.
So do you think that it's going to be difficult tomorrow, or is there going to be violence? Obviously, you don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I'm
going to
be there. I would hope not. They call it free speech. But, I think what people need to do is listen and hear. And then there won't be violence. I think if they truly listen and understand that the price for free speech is high, but what's the alternative?
All right. WBUR reporter Bruce Gellerman. Bruce, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Deb.
You are listening to Radio Boston, and as we said, we are taking your calls about this event, this rally in Boston tomorrow. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got our lines completely lit up here on Radio Boston with folks who want to discuss this free speech rally on Boston Common tomorrow. Marzell is calling from Martha's Vineyard. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Are you going?
No. I am a black male. I will not be around that area whatsoever. I would just like to say that what would speak in volumes is if nobody went to protest it and just let them say whatever they have to say and let it fall on their own ears, nobody else's ears. What would say speak in more volumes than nobody they're going to show up to protest, just let them do whatever they have to do. Because the more you cause friction for them, the more they feed off of it. And then that just fuels their fire and proves their point. Like, oh, look, these liberals over here are doing exactly what we said they were going to do. And it's just a frustrating thing to have them try and pretend to be right.
Okay. Well, we are going to talk about what all this attention has done to this particular event. But thanks very much for the call, Marzell. I want to turn now to someone who's in the studio with us and who's also at the center of this controversy, John Medlar, co-director of the New Free Speech Movement, the group that's organizing tomorrow's free speech rally. You're the spokesperson, John, for tomorrow's rally. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me back.
I'm sure you're overwhelmed.
That's an understatement. I've been doing so many calls this morning that my phone literally is dead right now.
Right, we're trying to charge it over in the corner here of our studios, but I'm sorry about that. First off, how many people are you expecting tomorrow?
There, as far as I'm concerned, there's really no precedent, at least not for me, because, the last rally that we had was really went off without a hitch, and it was so low-key, and compared to this, it just practically flew under the radar, and it was a lot more, we felt it was a lot more lighthearted and a lot more fun, and this sort of really took us amazingly by surprise. Right. Like the timing with the horrible events that happened down in Charlottesville, we just couldn't have anticipated that.
Mm. Well, let's talk about first your speakers tomorrow and what's happening with that.
Mm-hmm.
So who will be speaking for you tomorrow on Boston Common?
Well, everybody knows about Kyle Chapman and Joe Biggs. They're the ones that everyone's are focusing on. But
and they're confirmed speakers tomorrow.
Those two are confirmed, yes. Mm-hmm. Augustus Invictus is not speaking.
Okay.
So What most people don't know, what a lot of the media hasn't been really talking about, is a lot of the progressive or liberal speakers that we've reached out to, like Garrett Kirkland, who's an Occupy Wall Street former associate, and he's coming to speak about a series of laws that are actually being proposed in Congress right now. So if you want to hear about something that's a legitimate, a real free speech issue, then you're going to want to come down and listen to what he has to say.
So would you say, though, that there are more speakers who would be considered on the right than the left?
Well, we got a lot of speakers on the right initially, because particularly with our last rally, it was mainly a response to the actions of Antifa. So it was mostly being right-wingers targeted by Antifa, and since that was the focus of our last rally, we had a lot of right-wingers there. When we were starting up our next rally, we pretty much reached back out to the people who had spoken to us before, and we, of course, got most of them on board right away. But then, our intention was always to be open to a broad selection of views. But I guess, because the last rally was so low-key, we had been sort of taking it a little bit easy. When all of this blew up...
With Charlottesville.
And all of the violence that took place there, we realized that, first of all, it was essentially too late to cancel. If Charlottesville had happened and we were still laying under the radar, we were really considering canceling it and doing it sometime later.
But you didn't get the permit until this week.
Well, the reason that we had to rush to do that was because of all the media attention and the media hysteria, and we recognized that even if we told people not to go, they would show up anyway. So that would have been an even more dangerous situation if people were showing up without protection, without organization, and we wanted to make sure that we felt responsible for having, started this process, and we wanted to finish it with the best amount of control that we could.
Right. When you were on the show earlier this week, you said that your whole goal here, your main objective, is really just to promote free speech and different perspectives.
Precisely. And I want to emphasize that the fact that the topic of this rally is free speech itself. It's not just a platform for anyone to come up and just say whatever the hell they want. We specifically have invited people to come and talk about free speech and First Amendment-related issues.
Mm. But you mentioned Kyle Chapman. Mm-hmm. He goes by the nickname Stickman.
Based
right?
Stickman, yes. That's how the internet knows him.
Uh-huh. There's a video of him being very physically violent with counter-protesters in California, and he has tweeted that he will be on Boston Common tomorrow because, quote, I'm going to read this, quote, alt-left terrorists will be protesting and attacking us. It's time to honor our ancestors. Cowards, stay home.
Well, Kyle Chapman's basic philosophy is that you have to prepare for a fight to get the other guys to back off, and then hopefully there won't be a fight.
That doesn't sound like it's preparing necessarily for a fight. That sounds like it's egging it on here, right?
Well,
instigating a fight, isn't it? The cowards stay home, be brave, and accusing alt-left terrorists of attacking.
Well, that's what they do. That's exactly what Antifa does. They cause fights, and then they say, oh, look at us, we're such victims.
So do you think that that's what happened in Charlottesville?
I think that there were instigators real instigators on both sides, because both of the fringes benefit from violence. It essentially hollows out the center, and it forces people who are more afraid of the alt-right will sort of flee to the fringe left. People who are more afraid of the fringe left will flee to the fringe right, which is one of the reasons why I think it's so important for people to stay strong in the face of both of these fringes and come together around our core constitutional values.
But it was not an Antifa member who was driving the car that killed the young woman in Charlottesville.
No, no, no. Violent fringe radicals on both sides, and they're both trying to instigate violence.
Well, let's go on to some of the other speakers. Joe Biggs, you mentioned he worked as a reporter at the website InfoWars, and of course there were problems there as well. He helped promote that conspiracy theory that was known as Pizzagate with Hillary Clinton and the D.C. pizza shop, and then someone went to the pizza shop with a gun. And recently he defended what happened in Charlottesville. Why is he a headliner for you?
Because he is a... because he's a veteran and because he's a very big constitutionalist and pro-liberty activist. And as far as I honestly think that from everything I know about Joe Biggs, I honestly think people have essentially been distorting him. I disagree with the whole Pizzagate thing. I'll be flat out honest with that. I think that was a load of hogwash. But I understand why people who were convinced that was going on thought it was something important, because if you legitimately believe that there's a child sex trafficking ring going on, like, under your noses, then if you're a moral person who legitimately believes that, you want to stop it. But like I said, people
with
need
a gun.
What people need to do is people need to actually use better critical thinking and actually better examine the situation.
I think people base their opinions sometimes on the information that they get, and it can. People have to be very careful when they're conveying that information, which brings
absolutely.
Me to a question to this event and to you. Why have yourself... I understand different perspectives. I understand the goal, and I think it's a noble one. I think everyone agrees that free speech needs to be allowed, and you need to protect everyone's right to speak their opinions. However, there are people who are very violent, and there are hate groups. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
And so why allow yourself to be connected with hate groups then, especially groups that you know, have promoted and done violence, as we saw last weekend?
What do you mean by connected? I don't think I don't see myself as connected to anything that I would consider a hate group.
The rally overall is having speakers who have been connected to hate groups.
So it's guilt by association by association?
I would think so, yes. So, if you're an organizer and you're having folks speak at your event who are connected to those types of thoughts and groups, are you not then responsible for those people?
I'm responsible for what they say on my platform, yes, to a certain extent. And the reason that I'm bringing a whole host of people, not just like one, not just Joe Biggs and Kyle Chapman, and we're also bringing Vernon Supreme. Like I said, we're bringing Garrett Kirkland, we're bringing Ronaldo DiGallo, who's a pro free speech lawyer and a Bernie supporter. We're also bringing Shiva Iyadurai, a candidate for Senate who's also dealt with quite a lot of white supremacy in his career. So, and he's coming to speak specifically about that issue. We've also got candidate, I'm sorry, I forget the congressman's name. I apologize.
That's okay. I just want to get back to some of the bigger points as well, instead of just the guest list. Are you concerned that you mentioned all this attention and responding to all of the media attention to this event, and that was one of the reasons why you were trying to get a permit together quickly this week and decided not to walk away? I hope I'm not paraphrasing you incorrectly here.
Oh, that's accurate.
There are some folks who think that this all of this attention is also instigating folks who might be more prone to, taking very extreme acts or being violent. And the mayor of Boston today urged people, tourists, residents, stay away from Boston Common. Don't go there. It's frightening. And we've got callers lined up right now, and I can see many of them say they're not sure they want to go. Many of them don't want to go because they're afraid. Do you think it's going to end up being violent?
Well, I would have I'd be a lot more nervous about this if I didn't have such faith in the Boston Police Department. You know, I think they have been absolutely fantastic in stepping up to handle the situation. We have been extremely cooperative with them. We have agreed to all of their guidelines, even though my other partners in this thought those restrictions were a bit draconian. We would essentially, if Antifa shows up, we would essentially be helpless if they tried to attack us. But that's why I...
Why would you be helpless?
Because the Boston Police Department is going to be confiscating anything from us that could potentially be used for a weapon, like even flagpoles and things like that. And even things that are more defensive in nature, like shields and helmets, because those could be seen as, even though they're defensive in nature, they could be seen as like you're preparing for a fight. So we're essentially going in on this full Mahatma Gandhi.
But wouldn't Antifa be going in the same way? They're not going to allow anybody to have anything that can be construed as a weapon.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I hope that they're able to handle that with the massive amounts of counter protesters, because if you've got 10,000-20,000 people showing up, it's almost impossible to search all of those people. At least I would hope so. If anyone can do it, it'd be the Boston Police.
So what are you doing as an organizer to make sure that things don't turn violent?
One thing I want to emphasize is that if there are any legitimate white supremacist groups like the KKK, Identity Europa, Vanguard, things like that, stay the hell away from our rally, for goodness sake. Like, we've been planning this long before Charlottesville, I think, and the media hysteria trying to connect us with that, I think, has convinced some... some of these white supremacist groups that, ooh, maybe this is the next Charlottesville. Let's go up there. And no, we want to unite people around our common constitutional values. We don't want these legitimate white supremacist groups.
John Medlar, spokesperson for the Boston Free Speech Rally. John, thanks very much for coming into Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also, today, organizers of a counter-protest gathered to outline their plans to march from Roxbury to Boston Common tomorrow. The counter-organizers are affiliated with three main groups, Black Lives Matter Boston, Black Lives Matter Cambridge, and Violence in Boston. They say they don't believe the rally organizers' claims that tomorrow's event is not about white supremacy. Here's Roxbury activist Monica Cannon.
You can't say you don't stand for something, but everybody that you have on your speaking agenda stands for exactly just that.
We're expecting to hear from Monica later in our show, but first we're joined in studio by reporter Martha Biebinger from WBUR. She was at this gathering of counter-protesters today. Hi there, Martha.
Hi, Deb.
So the plan for counter-demonstrations is to march 2 miles from the Reggie Lewis Center in Roxbury to the Common. How exactly will that work? When will it start, and what's going on there?
It starts around 10 a.m. tomorrow with a short speaking program, and then the march. They won't say exactly what route they're taking. They're trying to be a little careful for security reasons, but there aren't that many ways to get from the Reggie Lewis Center to the Common. So we're expecting something in the Tremont Street area.
And what would you say is the main message of the counter-protesters?
Well, the main message is based on this presumption that there will be some hate speech at the rally, which we just heard John address. The organizers say they don't feel like they can allow that kind of speech, and they say, in fact, that if it was going to be an open conversation with the premise of free speech, that they would have been invited. Here's co-organizer Angelina Camacho.
And I think what else is also important to note is that this is really about free speech. We would have been invited from the beginning to have a platform as well.
And if they had that platform, Deb, they would want to talk about the ways that they think racism is still systemic. They still experience discrimination in schools, in courts, in housing, in banks, many places.
You know, Martha, there appear to be several counter-protest groups involved, and there have been estimates ranging all over the map. I know it's hard to say, but thousands, maybe tens of thousands of counter-protesters expected tomorrow. Is that the estimate that you're hearing?
Well, they point to their Facebook page, which shows more than 11,000 people confirmed for attendance and 25,000 some who are interested in coming. Of course, as you've noted, Deb, we have callers waiting on the line now, I think, who are a little worried about violence and whether that will keep some of these people away or maybe encourage people to come. It's hard to say.
You know, I just wanted to bring up something that John Medlar said in our conversation, and that's the group Antifa, a group that's been involved in other counter protests, has publicly espoused the use of physical confrontation. It says it's needed, really. Some of the members say it's needed to stop white supremacists. What do the counter-protesters say about that threat of violence from their side, if you will?
I'm not sure that they would say that's from their side.
Right.
Deb may just put that in quotation marks a little bit. But basically, they say they don't have any control over who shows up. They are holding nonviolent trainings today and have been for several days for anybody who wants to be sure they're ready to know how to respond to a situation of violence. They do expect the Antifa folks to be there. They don't know, at least they're not telling us anything about tactics that they know might be in the works. They are urging a peaceful protest and echoing the message that Boston police have given to both sides, that there will be no weapons, that there really won't be any signs of violence allowed.
And also, you've been following, Martha, how hospitals are preparing for tomorrow's event. What's going on there?
Right. So I saw messages from some of the hospitals that they had stepped up their planning the way they do for July 4th or the Boston Marathon, or anytime, you know, one of Boston's fabulous sports teams wins a championship, they get ready with adding people to the regular emergency department staff, making sure that they have people on call who are close enough to hospitals to get in. Mass General happens to be the hospital closest to the Boston Common, and they've been part of planning calls since Monday to be sure that they are ready if there is a surge in the emergency room visits. This is Dr. Paul Bittinger. He's chief of the Division of Emergency Preparedness at MGH.
What we have to be able to do is transition from a busy emergency department into a different kind of emergency department if there's a large-scale event. This is what we had to do during the marathon when we were very full when the bombing happened in 2013.
Dr. Bittinger, though, Deb, hopes that everyone maintains a cool head and that they don't see any unusual activity tomorrow.
Okay, well, let's hope so. WBUR reporter Martha Biebinger. Martha and much of the WBUR newsroom will be mobilizing to cover the rally tomorrow, so we will stay tuned to you tomorrow. Martha, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Deb.
I also want to go to one caller because our lines, again, are full. And listeners, we want to tell you we are taking your calls about the rally tomorrow, and we'd like to hear from you. Are you going? Are you not going? Our number here, 1-800-423-8255. Vivian is calling from Jamaica Plain.
Hello.
Hi, Vivian.
I want to echo the first speaker who spoke who is not going to go. And I think one of the things that we don't ever hear about is that another part of the right to speak, we have a First Amendment. Everybody has the right to speak. But we also have a right not to listen. And I personally wish that everybody decided not to go, that the mayor decided to throw a grand party right at Roxbury Community, get a band, give out ice cream, invest in a celebration of diversity and a celebration in Boston in the summer, and ignore them. We know what they're going to say. It's not going to be a discussion about what. What they're saying is hateful, and it's too bad that they can't bring helmets and bottles and flags, but what do they need those things for if they're not going to have a fight? They're itching to fight. They want to make other side look bad. We don't have to listen to that. It's abusive. It's abusive to hear that.
All right, Vivian, thanks very much for your call. Listeners, are you going tomorrow? Let us know at 1-800-423-8255. We will rejoin the program after a break. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We're spending this hour talking about the Boston Free Speech Rally that's being held on Boston Common tomorrow. Thousands of people expected to attend. In studio with me right now is the Reverend Mariama White Hammond. She's a minister at the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain and an activist and organizer. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, also, are you going tomorrow? Are you going to the rally? Are you going to protest, or are you staying away? Do you think this rally should happen at all? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. But first, Reverend, what are your thoughts about this event and what we've heard so far from both sides, really, mm-hmm. the organizers and the counter-protesters about what's going on here?
Well, there's so much to unpack here, but let me first talk about this question of free speech. So, I mean, I believe in the importance of free speech. I understand that it's a central tenet of our democracy. But one of the things I want to raise is if the question is the need for dialogue, then, you know, rallies are not the way to do that. Having even a bunch of speakers stand in the front and say whatever they feel is not the way to authentic dialogue. So I just want to push back on the notion that having a rally on the common where people say a whole bunch of things would ever be a great way to have the kind of dialogue I do think we really need in this country. Right. I think we've gotten to a place that things are so divided, people can't even hear each other. Mm. But that would never be bridged by having a rally where some people who believe that we need a race war to fix all this are speaking.
Right.
So, you know, the question of the counter-protest is also...
So Vivian, our last call, she said, you know, there's no, you know, there's no way that this can't, that people are not just looking for a fight here, that this is going to end in confrontation.
Well, I think it's really complicated. I mean, I've had a lot of conversations with folks. I think that there are a lot of folks who feel like if we say nothing, if we allow the folks to just get up and say this, then it makes it seem like there is no resistance to what they said. And so I think, you know, this I think there's a valid point to that, this sense that if they're allowed to march and say whatever they say and nobody speaks back, that could make them think that they actually have more support than they do. I do think, I'm just going to be honest, I think there are some real challenges here, both for the protests and the counter-protests. I do want to support a pushback, but I am also concerned about issues of violence. I have my 3-year-old goddaughter tomorrow, so I probably won't be anywhere near the common. I'm going to probably need to take her someplace where we're going to have some ice cream. But I do think, but I will be at there at the beginning of the march, and that is partially to say there is a need to push back and to say, no, we don't accept this. I've been actually working with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, that we've been doing racial justice work since the beginning, since we were in high school. And we kind of asked this question, like, what could we do? And it was interesting. We went online and learned about this community in Germany that had experienced a similar thing. They had had, you know, Nazi rallies in their town every year, and people were frustrated, and they held counter protests, and the Nazis still came. And so what they did is they decided, okay, so we're going to turn this march into a walk-a-thon. For every, you know, kilometer that you march, we're going to donate money to racial justice organizations. So my friend sent me this as a text, and I said, well, why don't we do this? So we actually started a page, pledgeit.org, No Boston Hate. And we've, since this morning, raised $20,000.
Are you kidding?
And it's going to go to racial justice organizations. We're sending it to the North American Native American Council right here in Boston. We're going to give money to the Council on Islamic Relations. We're going to give money to restore the New England Holocaust Memorial. So all of those causes that folks are going to be speaking against and which white supremacists are against, for every one of them that shows up for that rally tomorrow, we're asking people to give money to these different causes, partially because, again, if we're really trying to end white supremacy and end racial injustice, that can never be done in one moment. Mm. It can't be that we all show up one day and we go home and it's done.
Right.
It's long-term work, and so this money is going to support organizations who are in it for the long term. And if we want to have a conversation, let's do it. But it's got to be authentic dialogue where people sit down together and really listen to each other, not people yelling back and forth.
And I just wonder, in terms of the listening issue, you know, John Medlar was in the studio with us and he brought up this Antifa group, you know, which has publicly said it would use violence. I mean, is that worrisome to you?
I think that for me, I personally believe violence is a cycle that doesn't end. It doesn't get you where you want to go. So am I disturbed by the KKK? Absolutely. Would I wish that neo-Nazis would just go away? Yes. But I don't think that responding to them with violence is going to make them go away. In fact, they're already caught in that cycle. So if you join them in that, it just spirals more and more out of control.
Okay, I want to get to some of our callers because all of our lines are full. David is calling from the North End. David, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I just want to express concern that, you know, the counter-protesters haven't necessarily disavowed Antifa, and I'm just worried that if Antifa comes and causes violence, it's going to feed into this right-wing narrative that when people just express their free speech that the left attacks, which I don't agree with, but I'm concerned about furthering that narrative.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to that, Mariama?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think that's really challenging. I actually have had really good conversations with folks who just came back from Charlottesville. In that particular instance, and the thing is, Antifa is not a organization with a set of rules that everybody agrees to. It is different in different places. It's a grouping of different people. So it's really more like, you know, naming a grouping of people that have some similar ideas. So I'm not sure that there's an organization that people could sit down and say, this is how we'd like you to conduct yourself. Right. But I do know folks in Charlottesville, ministers that I know, who had Antifa actually stepped in front and took the brunt from white supremacists who went to go hit pastors. Hmm. So I think it's hard because I think they're not monolithic, but I do have concerns that it's true. There are some folks on the left who believe that violence is an answer, who believe that direct confrontations are moving us forward. And I'm concerned about anybody who believes that violence is an answer is concerning to me.
Mm-hmm. I want to go now to James, who's calling from Marlboro. James, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to comment about, standing up. I am going to go down to the rally tomorrow.
You're going. You're the first one who's going, James.
I am. I think turning on the TV and seeing neo-Nazis marching with torches, it got me off the couch. And I guess this idea of ignoring them, I just feel like there's a tremendous amount of apathy. I don't want to say that ignoring them is necessarily apathy, but I sense there's a great deal of apathy, and I think indignation is an important thing. And I think when people fail to start feeling indignation, that's when terrible things can happen. I mean, I think there have been a lot of things that have happened over the last few months, since the election, basically, that people have just sort of tried to ignore or looked away from. And it just keeps building and building and building to the point where, I'm sure that, months ago, a year ago, somebody would see something like this on TV and they would be aghast. And as many people just sort of shrug now, that I've spoken to as get upset about it.
Are you afraid?
Well, sure. I think that's part of the risk. I felt bad, so I was trying to rally some other people to come with me, and they were saying that they were concerned for their physical well-being. And my answer was, well, yeah. I mean, that's a factor. But if you believe that and you're principled and you want to take a stand, there's going to be a risk. Mm-hmm. So I actually don't want anything to happen. I don't believe in violence. I'm not going to retaliate with any kind of violence. If anybody comes at me, I'm going to do my best to protect myself or anybody in my environment around me. But that's a risk you take. If you believe in something, you're going to stand up. That's how I feel anyway.
All right, James, thanks very much for the call. Alex is calling from Quincy. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi. Wow. Thank you so much. This is a huge privilege. I don't have anything large or profound to say, but I'm a college student, and so, I'm in the middle of all kinds of controversial opinions and whatnot. And I have a lot of friends that are going to the rally for the counter protest. I'll be honest, I've got family members from all across the country that are calling me and saying, you're not going to that, are you? Because I'm not sure that going into an environment where you're having a movement to squash another movement, I just can't see how that's going to end up in any way but a violent, however means, verbal or otherwise, confrontation. I'm just not sure that's the most effective way to get your message across. I think that you guys were just talking about just a moment ago, the GoFundMe page, where for every member that shows up with this free speech motion that is supporting the Nazi movement, if you could have $1 funded, can you imagine the support that could be rallied behind that? That's going to be a huge impact in a way that isn't putting people in the way of danger.
Well, we just heard from our last caller who said, you can't just stand by and let these things go on, or you're allowing them to be normalized. So he feels that he has to take some kind of action and stand up to it in a physical way to make a visible demonstration that this is not acceptable. That's his prerogative, I know, but what do you say to those folks?
Well, I entirely agree. I think that it's completely unacceptable to be a bystander, to watch this happen and not take any action. I'm just not sure that physically standing in the way, while somebody who is very clearly, they think that they've got the right ideas, screaming in your face and saying all these ludicrous things, I just don't see how that's going to end up in a positive growth situation. If you can find a way around that that's more creative, that allows for good dialogue, however that might be. I'm like I said, I'm just a college student, so I don't have all of the answers. But if you find a creative way to do that in a way that doesn't put people in harm's way, then isn't that what everybody would want? Wouldn't that be the ideal situation?
All right, Alex, thanks very much for the call. Sonia is calling from Braintree. Sonia, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I am going tomorrow. I'm going to the counter protest, and I'm going. I'm a woman of color. I'm Latina, and I'm going there with the support of my friends, and we're going to stand up, for what we believe in. But the thing is, the rally is going to go on tomorrow. There's going to be a counter protest. It's going to happen. So the rally is going to happen. People are going to be there. It may be violent. It may not. Let's hope it's not violent. However, from this point forward, you know, there has to be a dialogue, regardless of the outcome of the rally. And what I would love to see is more of a voice, more of an engagement, more of a reaction from moderate white people. Like, since all of this has started, we have women have marched. There have been Black Lives Matter movements. You know, there has been, like, an antithesis of activity in communities that are, you know, that find themselves in a position of danger right now, women, people of color, LGBTQ. And then you have, you know, people who aren't very affected, and they say, well, you know, I don't have an opinion. Well, I don't want to get political, and you know what, or they get bothered because they see so many political posts on their Facebook page. And, you know, when there's silence from that group, it makes radical anti-Semites and white supremacists, their voice is louder because there's apathy, and it makes them feel like that's allowed. And then it makes the rest of us who are fighting, who are trying to make a difference, feel like nobody cares what we think. So the fact that we might be feeling some oppression, you know, goes by the wayside. So I feel that there has to be more of an engagement from moderate whites. I have friends who are white and they're liberal, and when I talk to them, it's like preaching to the choir, but it's like the people who say, oh, you know, I don't want to get involved. You know, that's when that silence is deafening, and that silence is dangerous.
All right, Sonia, thanks very much for the call. I want to go to Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, who is with us in the studio. So we've heard a lot here.
Yeah.
A lot from our listeners. And so sort of mixed about whether folks will go or will not go. And you initially said a one-day rally is really not the place for dialogue, but it is a place to make a statement, as we saw in January with the Women's March.
And I was there at the Women's March. I was the MC for the Women's March. Mm-hmm. It was amazing to look out and see 175,000 women out there. Here's the thing. I actually agree with all of the listeners. I think there are times when you have to stand up and say, this is not right. If I wasn't with a three-year-old, I probably would be there all the way through, because I do also have experience in de-escalation skills. And my husband is starting to say he might take our three-year-old goddaughter, which will probably be a little tight at our house, because she's tough and he's a little soft on her. But anyway, I think the reality is sometimes you do have to stand up and say something is wrong. And I think this is tough because not showing up sends a message, and showing up sends a message. It is a challenging thing to figure out how you go in between. What I think is, not everybody has to do the same exact thing, but everybody needs to do something. If you're saying, I have no idea, so I'm just going to do nothing, that's a real problem. Even if your work is to donate to an organization, or go to their next meeting, or start the work of having tough conversations in your own family where people may hold some of these problematic racist beliefs. The problem in America is that too many of us keep going on with our lives, going shopping, dropping our kids off, and not asking the hard questions about what do we want this country to be, and what are we willing to do? Where are we willing to put ourselves on the line? So I don't think there's one right answer for everyone, and I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm concerned about how things will evolve on Saturday. But I agree, particularly with our last caller. Apathy, not doing anything, trying to stay out of it. These are unacceptable responses.
Okay, stand by for one moment, because I do want to bring another voice into this conversation. One of the counter-protesters to the free speech rally, Monica Cannon, Roxbury activist, and she's with the group Resist Supremacy. Welcome to Radio Boston, Monica.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, so the numbers keep changing, but attention keeps increasing on this event tomorrow. At this point, how many people are you expecting?
At least 20,000 to 30,000.
What's your main message?
So a couple of things. I've been listening to everybody talk, and I think that the main thing that we want to exude is that understand that everybody doesn't have the privilege to ignore this crap, and nor will we be ignoring it. Also understand that the same way that they marched when it was Trump and it was the Women's March and everybody showed up and was excited and stood in solidarity, is the same way that I need those same people to show up and stand for people of color, for Native Americans, for the Jewish community, LGBTQI, and indigenous people in the city of Boston. Another thing I want to address is that This is not just about what happened in Charlottesville. It's not just about what happened in Flint and Ferguson and everywhere else around this country. The city of Boston has its own racist history that it can stand on alone outside from all these other things. What we plan to exude is, yes, we stand in solidarity with Charlottesville and we're against all those ideologies, but also highlighting that it happens right here in the city of Boston. And there are things that you can do legislatively, making sure that we have the proper representation that is representing us, and understand that a lot of these things are happening. The only difference is there's no sheets and there's no swastikas. Mm-hmm. There's khaki shorts and button-up shirts.
Do you have plans in case things get violent? We heard from, you know, John Medlar a couple of minutes ago in the show, and he says, you know, that folks have to be concerned about some of the violence that's been seen from so-called alt-left groups. I mean, what do you say to that, and what do you do if things do become violent? Because the situation seems to intensify and the emotions are getting heated.
And I totally agree with you. I think one thing that people need to understand is there's been a lot of misinformation that's been transmitted in regards to what we're doing. Not only are we holding nonviolent de-escalation trainings that we've been holding yesterday and all day today, we have trainers coming in from Toronto, from Charlottesville, from D.C., California, to ensure that community safety is our top priority. Again, I want to enforce, though, regardless of what procedures that we take, when you're protesting and you have this size of a rally, there are certain things that you just can't prevent. And time and time again, I've had this conversation at least for the last 48 hours when people say, well, what do you guys plan to do? It's all over social media. Everything that we're doing is very verbal. We're not going, like one person said that we were invited to speak on their platform. We're not going to speak on their platform. That would be stupid. So understanding that everybody is fully aware of the ramifications, but being a black woman raising five children living in Roxbury, I don't have the privilege to ignore anything.
Hmm. Well, why not speak on that? I mean, do you not agree with their contention that this is all about bringing different perspectives?
No, I don't agree with that, because what you say and what you do are two different things. When you look at who they have on their speaking agenda, Kyle Chapman, the moment you Google his name, it comes up white nationalist. Joe Biggs, Pizzagate with Hillary Clinton, Alex Jones, none of these people exude community. None of these people exude unification. None of them exude let's stop white supremacy and racism and all of those things. Although he's been saying it a whole bunch because it really sounds good, that's not what they stand for, nor that's not what they've been exuding through their communications on social media and email and everywhere else. So, no, I don't believe it. I believe that that's just something really nice to say.
You know, you suggested this morning that it would have been better if Mayor Walsh denied the permit for this rally.
Absolutely, because the thing is this, right? If we're going to talk about free speech, it has to be across the board. You can't be selective. When the cannabis community tried to do their rally here, Mayor Walsh immediately blocked it and forced them to go to court and get an injunction, right? And that was him taking a stand against cannabis, according to his words. So then if you know that a group is coming into this city, right, and they're practicing hate speech, even if they went to court, they would have won. You know, it's free speech. They would have won. We know that. But at least take every measure to show that you're taking a stand. And I don't believe that he did that.
But you know, there are many folks who say that you have to let folks at least have their say. You don't have to agree with them, but you have to protect their right to be able to speak.
Well, you know, as a person of color, time and time again, when I turn on my radio, my TV, or anywhere else, people of color have never been protected. And even when mm-hmm. we're standing peacefully, nonviolently protesting, we're beat, maimed, and killed. So it's one thing to say, hey, you know, they're coming here and we have to protect the free speech. But if we're going to protect it, let's protect it for everybody. We can't be selective. And that hasn't happened and continues not to happen in this country. And if we go as far as the president of the United States, every rally that he's had, we've watched people of color be beaten, be pushed and be treated poorly. And he actually kind of high-fived the white supremacists in his last statement. So it's cool to give stump speeches and political views and give nice little sound bites, but it's another thing to pay attention to what people actually do and look at their legislative policies. And that's what we're going to focus on.
Roxbury activist Monica Cannon, I wish we could talk longer, but we're running out of time here. You're an organizer with the group Resist Supremacy. Thanks very much. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Before we run out of time, Reverend Mariam, I want to end with, first of all, tell us again about PledgeIt.org.
Yeah, PledgeIt.org. No Boston Hate. It supports a bunch of organizations, including Black Lives Matter. And there's just So anyway, we'd love to have you if you're going, if you're not going, but you want to support racial justice 24/7 and year-round, support some of the organizations.
And you've
that are
raised
doing.
$20,000 just today.
Since we've been on the air, I think we're now at $23,000 that we're at. So our hope is to raise about $100,000 to send $10,000. Some of these organizations are very small, and they could use the money.
Oof. I feel like really I'm at a public radio fundraiser here.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
What overall, what's your message in our last minute here? What do you hope comes out of the rally tomorrow?
The key thing that we have to recognize is that America has a history of white supremacy, and it goes beyond a small number of groups. We've all got to stand up. We've all got to start a deeper dialogue, or else we are going to look up and have a country that doesn't reflect what we believe in.
All right. Reverend Mariama White Hammond, who's minister at the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks to all of our callers today. Sorry we didn't get everyone in, but that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.